And we are on air for Fanfare Racing's NASCAR weekend preview. And this weekend, we are previewing both Sonoma and Mid-Ohio. Joining me for tonight's show is our co-host, Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. Last weekend, we had a lot of racing right in the hub of Charlotte, North Carolina. This week, I don't know if it's fully West Coast to East Coast, but West Coast to Mid-Central on the road courses. So some good things to look forward to this weekend with some road course racing.
Absolutely. And in our first half hour, we will talk about the ARCA Menards Series racing out at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course this weekend. And then we'll also talk about the NASCAR Truck Series that's not racing this weekend, but they will be racing again next weekend at Texas Motor Speedway. So we'll get into some of the updates there. At the top of the hour, we have Austin and Jennifer Self coming on board. Austin, of course, is the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series driver, and his wife, Jennifer Self, actually does PR and marketing for AM Racing, the team that Austin races with. But she's also the defending champion of the Better Half Dash, and that's coming back on June 10th as an iRacing event. So that's going to be pretty cool because Austin's going to serve as their crew chief, and we'll get a chance to talk with both of them at the top of the hour tonight.
And that should definitely be a very interesting conversation.
I think so as well. Then at about 8:20 or 9:20, I guess, we will be talking about the Xfinity Series race. And they'll be racing at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course as well. And then about 9:40, we'll get into the NASCAR Cup Series race that is taking place at Sonoma Raceway. Both of those courses, as you mentioned, are road courses. So it's a road course weekend this weekend. And it's going to be a fun night. Of course, 10 o'clock is our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. And unfortunately, Jay, it sounds like it's going to be just you and me tonight. Andy's not able to make it. Mike's not able to make it. I tried to get Tommy, but Tommy's not available either. So it's just you and me on the Hot Topics tonight.
All right. Well, I knew Mike was out. I didn't know about Andy's status. I know he's kind of on call, so... Unfortunate that Tommy Rowan couldn't join us tonight. We always love to have them on as well in rotation.
Yeah, I usually go to Owen on Mondays and Tommy on Thursdays because Owen's not available on Thursdays. And if Owen can't do it, then I'll try to go to Tommy on Mondays. But I usually give them first shot. But anyway, this is the way it turned out for tonight. So it just didn't work out.
Well, we'll still provide some hot topics for sure.
Oh, yeah, we've got a few to talk about here. Okay, so let's go to the ARCA Menards Series. This is going to be a big deal out at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course because do you know, Jay, that this is the 1,500th ARCA Menards Series race at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course this weekend?
I can honestly say I do not know that. That is some great information. Larry McNugget, we'll have to come up with a name for your tidbits of information there instead of Larry McNugget, so I'll think on that.
Okay, well, yeah, let me know what you come up with. Anyway, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool to hear, and it's a testament to how deep and rich the history is here in the ARCA Menards Series, going all the way back to the 1950s. It's also the second round for the 2021 Sioux Chiefs Showdown and the second round for the CGS Imaging 4 Crown. So there's a lot at stake in this race this weekend.
Well, and when we get to it, that would explain some of the entries. We got a high number, I believe, 18 for the ARCA Menards main series here on the entry list. couple of them, maybe a cup driver, I think, is one of them returning. So that would explain that. I didn't realize that was kind of all three of the series that it was going to cover, or the series within the series.
The series within the series. Now, here's the other thing, and it's I don't have it on the schedule tonight, but we will definitely talk about this. The Arkham and Art Series West is actually racing at Sonoma as well. So we've got some information to share with everybody about that race as well, because there's a lot going on this weekend between the two series. So let's start with the Arkham and Art Series. It's one race, but three titles kind of on the line here, and they're racing Friday, June the 4th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be available on Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports Go, as well as on Radio MRN and Sirius XM Channel 391. If you're online, it's Channel 981. It's a 13-turn, 2.258-mile road course, and they'll be racing 42 laps over 94.836 miles. So, again, this is kind of a pretty big race that's going on here. We talked a little bit about this on Monday, the fact that you've got basically two drivers at the top of the list right now.
Well, we'll start with touch a little more on the history you talked about, the 15,000th race in Arkham and Art Series history. It is the second time the series has visited the 2.258-mile road course here in Lexington, Ohio. And Jack Boscher won the 408th Arkham and Art Series race back on July 25th, 1965, the only other time the series has visited Mid-Ohio. And the series is now back for 2021 for its first road course of the season. And as Sharon mentioned, marks the round two of the 2021 Sioux Chief Showdown and the second round of the CGS Imaging 4 Crown. So a lot of things going on within this one race itself.
Yes, indeed. Although multiple drivers are going to figure in to be in contention for the 1500th race win, or race, the list starts with only two drivers that have won races yet this series. That would be Ty Gibbs, who won four of the six races in the Arkham and Art Series that he's contested in 2021. He finished second on the road course at Daytona just last season in his only prior road course start in the series. He also won the NASCAR Xfinity Series debut on the same course in February. So two road course wins under his belt does not bode well for the rest of the competition. He's pretty much dominated the Arkham and Art Series on short and intermediate tracks this year. Friday marks his first chance to show whether he has the same kind of speed on a road course.
Well, we know from the Xfinity Series he does.
Yes, indeed.
Now, there are two super speedway races that have been run in 2021, Daytona and Talladega. Those were won by Corey Heim, who does remain the Arkham Menard Series points leader thanks to his average finish of 1.8. Heim, however, has no experience on a road course in the Arkham Menard Series going into Friday's race. But the pair of them, they're going to be challenged by the usual suspects at Mid-Ohio, series regular Nick Sanchez, Thad Moffitt, and Drew Dollar, among others that are entered. They're going to have to beat a few NASCAR National Series as well this weekend.
That's right. Austin Hill, who races full-time in the Camping World Truck Series and part-time in the Xfinity Series for Hattori Racing Enterprises, will run in the Arkham and Art Series at Mid-Ohio in the number one ARCO National Construction for the same team. Now, Hill has one top 10 finish and three ARCO starts dating back to 2015. There's also Brandon Jones, who competes full-time for Joe Gibbs Racing in the Xfinity Series, and he'll run the ARCA race in Mid-Ohio in Venturini Motorsports number 25, Tide Bounty Toyota. Jones has five wins, 23 ARCA Menards starts, and like Gibbs, he will compete in both Friday's ARCA Menards Series race and Saturday's Xfinity Series race at Mid-Ohio. There's also Chris Wright, who races part-time in the Truck Series for Young's Motorsports, and he'll enter Friday's Dawn 150 in Rhett Jones Racing's number 30 America Auto Auction Ford. He, too, is scheduled to compete in Saturday's Xfinity Series race at Mid-Ohio. In light of the time that we have, I think we should probably go right to the pit box for the West Series, and that race is going to be at Sonoma. And you've got people racing in the Xfinity race as well as the ARCA race at Mid-Ohio. But this race at Sonoma is going to be interesting as well. That race is Saturday, June the 5th at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. It will be live streamed on TrackPass NBC Sports Gold as well as the radio at arcaracing.com. Now, this is a 12-turn, 2.52-mile road course, and they'll be racing 50 laps over 126 miles. So we have a lot to talk about here as well.
Well, the biggest thing is we've been talking about it because it's been 3 months that have passed since the ARCA Menards Series West. They began their 2021 season at Phoenix Raceway, where Ty Gibbs won a combination race with the two series. Now, June is here, which means it's the first standalone West Series race of the season and first of several summer events on the West Coast. It presents a unique challenge, the General Tire 200 at Sonoma Raceway, as it's the first of two road courses for the 2021 West Series schedule.
Okay, so fans will be able to attend that race at Phoenix. The ARCA Menards Series West regulars like Jesse Love, Todd Souza, Trevor Huddleston, and Cole Moore had to compete against ARCA Menards Series regulars like Ty Gibbs, Corey Hine, and Thad Moffitt. Those drivers will face more non-series regulars Saturday at Sonoma because there's going to be several of those drivers like Chase Briscoe, Dylan Lupton, and Zane Smith all competing in that ARCA Menards Series West race.
Yeah, I still got a few regulars that are going to mix it up and really determine the West Series championship. You mentioned they only have one race in so far. It was a combination event. So we're going to see some great shuffle-up, I think, here in this series, in the series point standings as the West gets to its standalone races. And you're going to see the championship contenders emerge. And I think you mentioned several of them there, Jesse Love, Todd Souza, Trevor Huddleston, and Cole Moore, most definitely going to be towards the top coming out of Sonoma.
Yeah, but they're going to have some tough competition still when you think about people like Chase Briscoe, Dylan Lupton, and Zane Smith being on track with them. And those drivers are definitely, you know, some of those drivers – well, Chase Briscoe is a Cup driver now. He is going to be racing in the Cup Series as well. Dylan Lupton is been in some of the Camping World Truck Series races, but he's going to be in the number four this week for Bill McAnally Racing. Chase Briscoe is going to be in the number 14 for Chad Bryant Racing, and Zane Smith is going to be racing this weekend in the number 17 for Steve McGowan Racing. So, again, this is going to be a tough competition, I think, for the regulars, but at the same time, it's a chance for them to really showcase what their skills are.
It is, and I mentioned the point standings there. The top five that are currently in the top five in points are not entered. So Jesse Love in sixth, Todd Souza in eighth, and Trevor Huddleston in 10th. Again, that's where the focus is going to be, is this is their time to separate themselves and establish who is the top championship contender anyway here, even in race two already.
Exactly. So at the Do Not Miss event, I would really strongly encourage everybody to tune in for those races. They're both going to be very, very good on the road courses. We're going to move on, Jay, to the Camping World Truck Series. They are not racing this weekend, but they will be racing next weekend at Texas Motor Speedway in the SpeedyCash.com 220. The race will be Saturday, June the 12th at 1 p.m. Eastern. It will be televised with pre-race coverage starting at 12 o'clock on Fox Sports 1, MRN, and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Now, we'll get into more details for that race on Thursday, but let's give folks a few updates about what's happening in the Truck Series at this point.
All right. Well, I'll give a quick update on the Sunoco Rookie of the Year, and that is coming out of second place showing at Charlotte. Carson Horsivore now continued to extend his lead over Chandler Smith to stay atop of those standings, holding a 53-point advantage. He sits at 264 to Chandler Smith's 211. Smith had a respectable showing himself, finishing sixth, but Horsivore scored stage points between the only Horsivore scored stage points between the two. Haley Deegan is third at 179. She finished 13th at Charlotte. Chase Purdy, unfortunately, is at 106 points in fourth. He finished 34th at the Circuit of Americas, had a rough night. And then Chris Wright is in fifth with 58 points. Now, Wright has only competed in 6 of the 10 races this season. Most recently was at Charlotte, where he had 23rd at the conclusion of the race.
Okay. Now, you've heard us talking about the Triple Truck Challenge presented by Wampley. Well, last week, John Hunter Nemechek became the third different winner in the Triple Truck Challenge presented by Wampley, and he won that $50,000 bonus, which, and so the Triple Truck Challenge actually ended at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Sheldon Creed won the opening round this season at Darlington Raceway. He netted a $50,000 bonus, and then Todd Gilliland followed that up by winning the second leg of the bonus program last the weekend before at Circuit of the Americas. So $50,000 bonuses for all three of those drivers, and that's it for the Triple Truck Challenge presented by Wampley this year.
It's kind of cool to see it spread around amongst three different drivers. I kind of like that.
I like that too.
Now, the Camping World Truck Series is taking the weekend off before heading to Texas. They have the weekend off. The Cup Series, again, we mentioned in Sonoma, and the Xfinity Series taking on Road America. But Texas, that'll be the first race in a doubleheader on Saturday, June 12th at Texas Motor Speedway for the Speedy-.com 220. They'll race first, and then the Xfinity Series will race later in the day. Johnny Sauter and Kyle Busch are tied for 5 wins apiece at Texas in the Truck Series. Matt Crafton is the only active driver with multiple wins there with 2. Okay, Johnny Sauter's active. I don't understand that. But, oh, I'm sorry, it's Matt Crafton's the only other. I'm sorry. In fact, the other two active drivers that have wins on the 1.5-mile truck are Kevin Harvick and Sheldon Creed, who won the most recent race last fall there at Texas. So look for some of those names to be your contenders when we preview that next week.
Yes, indeed. Now, there are 10 down and 5 more races to go in the regular season. That's unbelievable, Jay. It seems like we're just getting started in the Truck Series. So with 5 races left in the regular season, not too much has changed from a week ago. John Hunter Nemechek, Ben Rhodes, Sheldon Creed, and Todd Gilliland still are the only drivers that have spots in the playoffs by virtue of their wins. That currently leaves just 6 spots to be filled by points. Now, 5-time Texas winner Johnny Sauter still holds the 10th and last spot based on points. Now he's just 2 points ahead of Austin Wayne Self, who is going to be our guest coming up here, who is the first driver on the outside looking in. Now, another previous Texas winner, Matt Crafton, dropped to 7th on the playoff grid, but he's still comfortably in position to advance to the postseason. Now, the remainder of the field currently in the playoff picture, Austin Hill moved up to 3rd in points, Zane Smith 6th, Stuart Friesen 8th, Carson Hosobon 9th on the playoff grid, are all looking for their very first win at Texas Motor Speedway. Although Grant Dinfinger is currently 9th overall in points, he's not eligible for the playoffs after missing the race on the Daytona Road Course earlier in the season. Hill has 9 starts at Charlotte with a pair of top 5 finishes, including a runner-up result last year. Smith has 2 starts, both last season, and he finished third in his second race. Friesen has a trio of top fives and four top ten results, including a best of second in the first race there in 2018. Sunoco rookie points leader Josevar is making his track series debut at Texas Motor Speedway this next weekend.
Interesting stuff there. The one thing that's been a constant this year, and that's Toyota and John Hunter Nemechek and Kyle Busch Motorsports back in victory lane. Now, Toyota dominated the opening portion of the season by winning the first seven races. Chevrolet and Ford took their turns in victory lane at Darlington and then at Circuit of Americas. But at Charlotte last weekend, Toyota came roaring back into the winner's circle with Kyle Busch Motorsports driver John Hunter Nemechek behind the wheel. The win was the third for Nemechek on the year and the sixth for KBM. That gives him a 44-point advantage over Ben Rhodes for the points lead and a shot at the regular season championship and the spoil, which is an additional 15 playoff points that come with that title. Now, after the off week, the NASCAR Camping Truck Series will head to Texas Motor Speedway. And Nemechek has yet to net a top five, but he also hasn't raced there in a truck since 2017. His best finish came in his second start there, which was the summer of 2016, when he was seventh. Overall, he has an average finish of 15.2 in five starts there between 2015 and 2017. But the one key thing to remember, he is now in a Kyle Busch Motorsports Toyota Tundra. So I think that factors in.
Yes, indeed. Okay, now we should also mention here that the ARCA Menards Series East is also not racing this weekend, but they also will be on track next week for the Southern National 200 on June the 12th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time at Southern National Motorsports Park, and that will be available via track for NBC Gold members. So just a quick update there on what's going on with the ARCA Menards Series East and when their next race is going to be. Jay, we have a few minutes here. Let's give an update. I don't think we had an update for a while. We didn't do a show last Thursday, and I don't think we gave an update on Monday. So,
all right. Well, we'll start with the Truck Series, and at the top of that is the top of Fan for Racing Blog Talk Radio here. Sharon, you're at 45 points. Andy has narrowed it a little bit. He's at 40, so you got a 5-point lead. I'm at 38. Mike is at 35. Tommy at 31. Owen and Sam are tied at 30. And James is at 24. So that one I still think is our tightest overall from top to bottom. Doing math in my head, I take that back. You got 21 from top to bottom in the trucks. On the Xfinity Series, the smallest overall point lead, Mike has a 1-point lead over Andy. Mike's at 51. Andy's at 50. Sam is at 45. James is at 42. Owen at 38. I am at 36. Tommy's at 34. And Sharon, you're at 33. You went top to bottom in those two.
I was going to say, top to bottom between the two series.
That one is only an 18-point difference, though, from top to bottom, so that one's a little bit tighter overall. The Cup Series, I still have the biggest point lead at 8. I can't seem to get past that. I'm at 79. Mike is at 71. Sam is now at 70. He's only a point behind Mike. Sharon, you're in the middle at 64. Owen at 62. James has climbed up to 55, Tommy at 46, even with the late start, and Andy, he's standing by his word. He's taking Chase Briscoe no matter what. He's struggling a little bit here on the Cup side. He's at 30 points. So
overall,
Mike and I, it's still close there, 2 points. Mike's got the lead at 154. I'm at 152. Sharon, you are at 142, but you got Sam breathing down your neck at 139. Owen's at 126, James at 119, Andy at 115, and Tommy at 104. So even taking Tommy in at 104, It's 50 points overall for the three series, and Tommy had a little bit of a late start. So very competitive season for the Fanfare Racing Group here.
I would say so. We've really got it pretty tight there. So I wanted to give some information here as well about the Better Half Dash. We've got Austin Wayne Self and his wife Jennifer Self coming on here at the top of the hour. And, you know, the last time we raced a Better Half Dash event was in October of 2017, Jay. And that race was actually won by Jennifer Self. And they usually race in a Legends car. And this year is going to be a little bit different because it's going to be an iRacing event, and they're going to be racing at Charlotte Motor Speedway in this iRacing event. So Jennifer is the reigning champion of this race, and so that's why we asked her to kind of come on the show. She also is the PR and marketing manager at AM Racing, where Austin is the driver of the number 22 in the Camping World Truck Series. Now, he's going to be her crew chief for this race. So that's kind of cool, too.
I think so. And, you know, that's a lot of different questions to come at this. And I know since I've been on this show, I think this is the first time we've had a pair of guests like this at the same time, let alone a husband and wife in this situation. So I'm really excited about this conversation we're going to have here coming up shortly.
Yeah, I've got to think, though, it's going to be a really different situation with them doing it on iRacing. And I wonder how many of these drivers are, you know, women that are going to be racing, how many of them have done iRacing before. Some of the other competitors in this race include Kelly Earnhardt Miller. She's the co-owner and vice president of Junior Motorsports. She's the wife of L.W. Miller III. Then you got Kristen Labonte, president of Breaking Limits and wife of the 2020 NASCAR Hall of Fame inductee and Fox NASCAR analyst Bobby Labonte. Morgan Bell is the wife of Christopher Bell. Marissa Briscoe, the wife of Chase Briscoe. Megan Smith, the wife of Fox NASCAR reporter Reagan Smith. Jenna Petty, girlfriend of Harrison Burton. Tammy Rice, wife of colleague racing president Chris Rice. Julia Piquet, the girlfriend of Daniel Suarez. Jennifer Self and Austin Wayne Self, the winner of the 2017 Better Half Dash. Carissa Flores, the wife of Ryan Flores, who is a French tire changer as a number two for Team Penske. Alexa De Leon, girlfriend of Tyler Reddick. And then I also read there's a couple of other people that are going to be driving that weren't on this original list. And let me see if I can find it now. It is McCall Galding, who is the girlfriend for Zane Smith, or known as Zane Smith's better half, and then also Kennedy Galding, who is the girlfriend of Taylor Gray. So they are sisters, so they're going to be competing against each other. So that's two other entries that was not on the original list. So pretty cool to see this happening as an iRacing event. And all of the proceeds, by the way, and we'll talk more about this when Jennifer comes on, this is a fundraiser. So they're going to be raising funds for the MRO, which is the Motor Racing Outreach Program with NASCAR. And if you go to their website, you can donate. And we'll get more details about that as we talk with Jennifer. But let's go ahead and we are at the top of the hour, and I want to bring her into the queue here. So first of all, welcome, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Really excited to have you on the show tonight, and I know Austin's going to be joining us as well. I wanted to bring you on tonight because you are the defending champion of the Better Half Dash. And the last time that we ran one of those races in NASCAR was back in October of 2017. So they're coming back this year with the Better Half Dash. But instead of a Legends car, which is what you guys normally race, you're going to be racing iRacing. How different
is
that going to be for you? How different is that going to be for you guys?
I think I was a little more confident when we did it back in 2017 when we actually were on the racetrack. This iRacing thing is it's a lot different than I guess what I thought it was going to be. And thankfully, I have a good coach. Austin does a lot of sim time during the week, so he's been able to sit with me and give me a couple tips. But it's definitely a learning curve for sure.
Okay. I would think that that's going to kind of throw quite a few of the drivers off. Are any of these drivers that are entered, I've gone through the list of who's on the entry list, are any of those drivers iRacers at all?
I don't think any of them are, to be honest with you. I think a lot of us are pretty new to it. I know there's a couple girls that did the actual Better Half Dash back in 2017. I know Tammy Rice did it with us. But I think all of us, from what it seems like on all of our practices and talking to all the girls, this is kind of a first-time deal with all of us. Usually we're the ones watching our husbands do it and giving them tips. Now they're giving us tips.
And I think that's fantastic. Now, is Austin on the line with you, or is he calling in separately?
No, I'm here. I'm here listening, making sure she's giving you the right answers. She's not lying to you.
Oh. Okay, Austin, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you with us. And you're going to be in a different role this weekend as well, because Jennifer's going to be behind the wheel, but you're her coach and kind of crew chief for the week, for the race. So how does that feel?
You know, it's back in 2017, when there was real cars, you know, we were at the track and whatnot. I felt like my role was a little bigger. Maybe she listened to me a little bit more. But the iRacing is so difficult. You know, she sat there and watched me do the iRacing, and I've always thought that the iRacing was a little bit harder than real life because you can't feel the car. So for me, it seems like I'm giving her advice, and as she gets frustrated with me, you know, she's quick to be frustrated at me. And the thing about iRacing, that it's funny watching somebody new get on the iRacing, but you know, there's really no, there's no fear of wrecking or anything, right? So you can go out there and try to go full throttle. Oh, that didn't work. You hit the wall, no big deal, restart. So I think the hardest thing this time is where before, where she had that little bit of being cautious, right? You don't want to wreck the race car. Now she's, you know, there's more confidence than anybody can handle on the iRacing, because you can press restart. But when it comes to the race, you can't be driving like that. So as far as me being a crew chief, we can't make any changes. Otherwise, I think the drivers, all of us, would be all over it. So it's strictly pretty much a coaching position, and it's been difficult. I've kind of gotten frustrated at times, but she picked it up pretty quick. I mean, pretty good on her own. So there isn't a whole lot I really have to say.
Okay, well, I'm sure the moral support is helpful, and I could see, you know, I've got a granddaughter that's getting her driver's permit, and I'll tell you what, it's kind of scary. It's kind of scary being in the driver's seat, and she gets frustrated at the coaching that we try to give her sometimes, but it's understandable how that can happen. Tonight we do have with us our co-host, Jay Huseman, and I know he's anxious to talk to you as well.
Awesome.
Well, thank you, Sharon. I don't know if anxious is the right word. I said this should be an interesting conversation, and you both kind of mentioned it already. I think you used the word frustration with each other. How is that when you're working with a spouse or girlfriend like that of, and I kind of wanted to ask Austin, in years past, now we've seen it, the role change, the female drivers, but you being the one to watch them race and your fear for them out there on the track or whatever that they normally do for the husband driving.
Yeah, well, I think for us, Jennifer grew up, going to the racetrack with Jordan and being at the racetrack. And I met Jennifer at the racetrack racing. And I think in the past, 5 years, however long it's been, she's only missed like four or five races because of the surgery. And one time she went on a bachelor party for her bachelor party. But Jen, I feel like she has, maybe one of the advantages she has is just the knowledge of being at the racetrack. She always has the radio on. So I can talk to her all the time about my races, and she kind of understands, she knows what I'm talking about with the race car, what I'm struggling with on the racetrack or different things that goes on. So, she has a bunch of knowledge on it. And so I think that helps in a way when she gets on the racetrack and then we can talk about it. So my advice, I don't really have watered down my advice. I can be pretty straightforward with her as far as, when I tell her to try something, she kind of has an idea of what to do. And then, when we were there in 2017, I wouldn't say I was ever fearful of her getting hurt. I don't know. For me, I'm just in the competitive mode where I was just looking to get better and better on the racetrack, her to get better and better. And that's kind of translated over again with the iRacing stuff where, I know she can do it. And, I know it's, I guess a charity race, whatnot, but, and it's a great cause having MRO put this on and what they do for us at the racetrack and, of course, getting Soldiers for Faith involved. But I still want to go out and win the thing. We got a trophy here at the house sitting in my basement in my man cave. And
it's the only trophy we have in this house as of right now.
No, that's not true. It's not true. I got that Winchester trophy down there. No, but
that's a big one.
Yeah, so we're both very competitive growing up, me growing up racing and her growing up in the racing racing world, being there at the racetrack every weekend, right there by my side, doing PR and whatnot. So we both want to go win. So for me, I get more nervous because, I'm kind of in the passenger seat. And for me, I'm used to being in control of the races and doing this and that. And now I'm kind of
he's the backseat driver now.
I'm the backseat driver now, and that's difficult for me. That's what makes me nervous. I want to go out and perform, and it's fun, but at the end of the day, you want to win. I don't care what kind of race it is. We could be racing longboards down a hill, and we want to win. So.
Okay,
Go ahead, Sharon.
I was just going to say that drive to win or drive to, be competitive is, I think, just kind of part of being a racer.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Sure.
Well, and I said this is where the conversation I said would get interesting. They're trying to compare trophies, So this next one I'm going to tread lightly, too. You said you've been around racing your whole life. With him as the driver, if you try to coach him with things you see from that perspective, like he said, he can talk to you in a race language. Do you talk to him that way when he's driving and hope that he listens to some of the things you've seen or even experienced now?
Oh, yeah. So he's actually started, we do in off weeks, he's running a dirt modified. He's kind of gotten, I think he's done how many races? 4 races right now. Yeah. And I'm pretty quick to say, hey, you're listening too soon or you're not throttling up right. And I mean, we were at COTA a couple weeks ago. He got to test the Porsche out and I was riding around the track watching him and he kept having his brake lights on a turn that no one had their brake lights on but him. So I kept giving him all kinds of feedback on saying, quit putting your brakes on there. And I think he gets frustrated when he hears some of it sometimes, but we kind of understand each other.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. She's not lying. I mean, she gives advice and this and that. It's funny though, because like I said, maybe it's different for other drivers and their wives, but as involved as Jennifer is with my racing career, and you know, like I said, she's part of the team, and we kind of shared the emotions at the racetrack. But you know what? She does tend to poke at some things if I'm struggling with something. So now the tables are turned, and I've already found out she doesn't like it. So I'm poking at her, telling her she needs to do this and that, and she's I think she's struggled with the criticism more than I ever did from her. So, but it's fun to watch. So it's that's been a funny aspect to it as well. I'm glad you asked that.
Well, my last question, I'm going to steer away from any kind of controversy when it comes to that. The last question, it really is about the two of you working together. We see different levels of support, obviously, from all family members at all levels. But to be the PR for the team that he's driving for, what's that interaction like? I mean, you're not just supporting him. I mean, you are presenting him and representing him.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's interesting. I always think, what would it feel like to go to the racetrack and just sit there and be a wife, you know, support him. And I always have to stay busy, you know, growing up in the sport with my brother, you know, I always kind of handled his PR stuff, and then following with Austin, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. It definitely took us a little bit of adapting to working together, but it's the best relationship I think that I could ever have. It's definitely a really neat experience to be able to go to the racetrack and support him and, you know, kind of understand the sponsorship side of things and the marketing and kind of doing it together.
Well, and I'll add to that because, you know, it's also interesting because, you know, she, like I said, she spends a lot of time around the team, you know, so the kind of chemistry that, well, at least a good team or any team I've been around, you know, you got a bunch of guys grouped together and we're all pretty hard on each other. And so, you know, on race weekend, she's part of the team. So she's got to take some of the heat sometimes, you know, rather us poking fun at each other and whatnot. She's in there and so she can handle her own, you know, when it comes to being around all the guys and
definitely can't have sensitive feelings in the sport of racing.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I'm trying to think, where were we? Bristol. We're at Bristol and, you know, I guess it was in the middle of the race. And, you know, we had the, 5-minute break so we could do tires and all that. Well, we would hook up the cool down units and we were having a problem with the cool down unit, and they signaled her, they're trying to do something, and Jen went ahead and what did you do, pull lever? I can't remember.
Hooked it up.
She hooked up the cool down unit from behind the wall. So, she comes in handy sometimes in that aspect. If we're having a problem, she was there for us. She was a big part of our top 10 at Bristol. So that's the other cool aspect of it too. She can take the heat from the guys and every once in a while she's at the right place at the right time to make some decisions that other guys might miss. or if we need her, she's there to help us.
I think that's great. I mean, obviously, any kind of relationship with male, female, or any of it, like you said, the team, to be part of the team, you know, you got to work together. And I think that's great that you two are in that kind of relationship, a PR side, as well as now with the racing. And I'm great to see this program back. You know, I have missed it. I'm from the local dirt tracks. We call them the powder puff races. To see that and see the support that it gets, especially being that it's for the charity with the MRO. So I'm so great to see it back. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Sharon here for a couple more.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. I think she might be handling her dogs. I know she's got a couple of dogs, and I heard them in the background. So she might be she might be taking care of them real quick.
We heard him barking, and Art kind of looked at us like he wanted to talk, too. He's sitting right next to us.
Mine's still a puppy, so. But anyway, I wanted to ask Jennifer, how much practice time have you had? with the other races?
We did, they've kind of done this whole week a couple practice races, and I've done two solid full practice races, you know, with qualifying heat races and stuff like that. And then on these off weekends, you know, I've been up at the shop just running laps on the sim. It's kind of interesting, though. So the setup that they've got for our race is, you know, obviously a fixed setup. So it's kind of navigating through, all right, well, I ran this race on this setup. Now I got this race car that's a little bit tighter, so kind of trying to navigate through that. But I've put in a couple hours up there at the shop.
Oh, okay, so that's and that's probably about the same for all of the racers for the better half dash, right?
Oh yeah. I've seen a lot of them taking advantage of all of these practice races this week. So I think the competition is going to be pretty stout. I might have to go to the shop this weekend and put in a couple extra hours before our race.
Okay. Now, this is really all about raising money for MRO, the Motor Racing Outreach. And I just, how can fans donate and how can you get the credit or how can they choose who they want to get the credit for their donation?
Yeah, absolutely. There's MRO's got their website. It's www.mro.com. And under their events page, they've got our better half of all of the women that are doing it and kind of their bios and background information on them and their better half, or we're the better half. But you can click your driver, and each driver is driving for a specific charity. I'm running for Soldiers for Faith Ministries, and there's an option there to donate. And the benefit of donating, whoever gets the most donations gets to start P1 and P2. So it's a big advantage there getting the pole.
That's right. So Jennifer is the defending champion of the Better Half Dash, so I'm sure you guys are doing a lot of things to try to encourage donations from everybody, and we'll put a shout-out here on the radio show to get over there and make your donation on behalf of Jennifer Self to help
that
her get the
awesome
P1 or P2 position.
I would appreciate that. That's awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Now, Austin, as the coach and everything, I wanted to bring this up because it's so obvious as we've been talking here throughout the evening, and that's that you guys are giving each other coaching one way or the other. You know, it's reciprocal. But it seems to me like there's a lot of trust there, and that's why you can kind of laugh about it, even though there might be a bit of frustration. So that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, you know, and I think she's a great driver. I mean, like I said, she's been around long enough, so, you know, she understands the talk. She kind of knows what's going on. So when I give her feedback, it's fun for us. You know, it's fun to play that different position, right? Have her driving the race car and me sitting back and telling her she's doing this wrong or try this or do that and watching her kind of apply some of the stuff when I say it, you know, is fun, you know, and
that's good.
You know, I'm thinking, I said it last time, but I think she's getting pretty close to maybe, I got a late model sitting in storage right now. We might have to break that thing out you know, she's mastered a Bandolero. She's working on the Legends car in iRacing. You know, I think naturally the next step is to put her in the late model, go test the late model. If she can do that, heck, one of these days, maybe she can go race the big stuff, and if she's good enough at that, maybe I can whatever she makes off that, I can go racing off. she can be sponsoring me. Maybe I'll be following her around.
Is that something you want to do, Jennifer?
We'll have to see. We'll have to table that thought.
I don't know if I could do it anyway. I think I might be jealous. I think I might be jealous if she was. If I had to follow her around, I think I'd be jealous. It's hard.
Uh-oh.
One thing is hard too is watching the race car, being at the racetrack for me after driving all these years, is not driving. That's so hard to do. You know, to be that close to something and not being in it.
I will say we back in 2017 when we did the Better Half Dash, you know, they had we had two practices at Charlotte Motor Speedway, and I'll never forget suiting up. I had his suit on, and I'm a few inches taller than he is, so it was a little snug. But I remember sitting in that bandolero, and he came over with the headset, and I think his arms were shaking, his hands were shaking. He was so nervous. I've never seen him that nervous. You could hear the quivering in his voice over the radio.
Oh, well, I'm sure he was excited for you and what you were about to embark on there. So, you know, it's funny how when there's somebody that you care about, how you respond to that. But especially if it's something new, you know, that he hasn't had to do week in and week out like you do. I know we're at the end of our segment here, but real quick, Austin, I wanted to ask you, you're on the cusp, you're on the outside looking in right now in the truck series, and you've got a chance at Texas, of all places, at Texas. what's your outlook at Texas Motor Speedway as far as maybe getting yourself on the other side of that cut line?
Yeah, I think the next five races are all places, I think, you know, besides Pocono. Pocono last year was a little rough. It was almost a survival race. So we don't know what that's going to be like this year. But, you know, the next five races, we got Texas and Watkins Glen and Nashville and I don't think the other one. We were just talking about in the meeting the other day, but you know, the next five races are all places we feel we have the strength to go out and have really good runs. The last time I talked to you, I was saying that we were really hoping for a little bit more of a breakthrough, and we thought we were going to have that in Austin on the road course, and, you know, we had some pit crew struggles and didn't get quite the finish we needed. Last week was a little rough, so... Yeah, I think obviously the next one's Texas. That's what we're focusing on right now, one race at a time. And we had a pretty good race there in the fall last year when that was I think the second race I had with Ryan, my new crew chief, and we finished sixth there and ran in the top five. So you know, we feel really confident. We've felt confident. And we said we got to put everything together and we're going to be just fine. And, I feel really good. We've barely shown what we got. And if we can put the next few races together, I think we make it in. I think we gain a lot more points and make it in. And man, that would be such a monumental big thing for me and AM Racing to be able to make the playoffs, especially here in 2021. The field is so stacked with a lot of great drivers and teams. It would be big. I'm thinking we can do it.
It would be.
I think we can have a really good run at Texas. I want to win it. I'd like to win in Texas.
I hear you. It's Texas, Nashville, Pocono, Knoxville, and Watkins Glen are the next five races. So Knoxville, of course, is going to be kind of new for the truck series, but I think a lot of people are looking forward to that one.
Yeah, the Knoxville's another dirt one. That's been a style of racetrack that I've really enjoyed and felt really good on. But, man, that's really cool to think about the last five races before the playoffs, how diverse it is. You know, that's a lot of opportunity, not just for me, but everybody. I mean, obviously, it's the racetracks are interesting enough. We're seeing Chase Elliott and William Byron. We're seeing a lot of Cup drivers wanting to come down and race in the Truck Series. This year has been a really cool season. You know, of course, we see Kyle Busch come down all the time, but – you know, the Truck Series has been really interesting this year and caught the eye of Cup drivers like Martin Truex. And, of course, now we got William Byron coming back. And that definitely makes it interesting. But I'm just very happy with the schedule this year. The last five races as diverse. We got dirt road course and some ovals and, of course, the the Tricky Triangle. So lots of really cool races coming up here, and like I said, we got opportunity here.
I agree with you. You've got a lot of opportunity here in these next five races, and you know we're going to be cheering for you. We'd love to see you in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I think we're more than capable of doing it. So, I'm hoping we do, and I'm hoping you want to talk to me if we do again.
No, you know we will. Okay, well we're going to have to bring it to. Pardon me.
I was just going to say, well, you got my number. You know how to get a hold of me. So, whenever you want to talk, just let me know.
Okie doke, will do. But thanks again, both Jennifer. You know, we really enjoy chatting with you. We don't always get a chance to do that, and this was a great opportunity to talk with Jennifer. And Austin, we always enjoy having you on the show and catching up with you. So thank you both so much for being on tonight. Any last shout-outs you want to do before you say goodnight?
I appreciate you guys having us on today. It was neat to actually be a part of the radio show tonight, so I appreciate that.
Well, yeah, we love to have you on, Jennifer.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Appreciate it. A little shout-out to AM Racing, and then
go vote. Go donate.
Go vote, and also go mark this down. I think this is Jen's first interview, so.
Big day today.
big day for Jennifer here. She's a little nervous to talk to you guys. I told you guys are a lot of fun
great.
To talk to. I said you guys are always a lot of fun to talk to. Always look forward to talking to you guys. So I'm glad she got to talk to you guys. So thank you.
Thank you, and good luck, Jennifer, for next Thursday night, June the 10th. 6 p.m., is it?
Yes. We're actually racing June 8th, and then it gets aired June 10th. So I might know who wins before you do. I might have to fill you in.
No, we can't be doing that. Nope, no filling in. It's a surprise.
Yeah, you don't ruin the winner for us. But yeah, if you know, and we can get you on the show, that would be even better. But if you're the winner, that is.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you guys, good luck this next week. Austin, you in these next five races. Jennifer, you on June 8th, I guess. And we'll be keeping an eye out.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, take care now, guys.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
All right. That was Austin Wayne Self along with his wife Jennifer Self, and wow, that was a lot of fun. We went overtime, Jay, but I think it was worth it.
Oh, that was definitely worth it. Like I said, I was looking forward to it as the interesting concept of that kind of conversation with what it was about. It far exceeded expectations. That was so awesome to have them on there. And, yeah, Jennifer did a great job. If that was her first interview, you wouldn't have known
it
if
sure
they
was.
Hadn't told us.
Exactly. I mean, she did a great job, and Austin always does a good job. So definitely really enjoy having them both on the show here tonight. And we'll look forward to seeing what happens in that Better Half Dash. And, again, everybody go over to that MRO website and give your donation through Jennifer Self and help her get into that first or second position, hopefully the first position, right? Help her get the pole for that first position at the Better Half Dash. So, okay, Jay, we've got to move on here to our next series, which is the Xfinity Series racing at Mid-Ohio. We're kind of bouncing between Sonoma and Mid-Ohio here, but they're going to be racing the B&L Transport 170 on Saturday, June the 5th at 1 p.m. Eastern. Fox Sports 1 will carry the pre-race coverage at 12 noon, and radio coverage is on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll be racing a distance of 169.35 miles over 75 laps. Stage 1 and Stage 2 are both 25 laps apiece. and the last stage ends on the last lap, also 25 laps, lap 75. So let's get right into it, Jay.
All right. Well, we'll start with some family news. Preston Pardis is going to have his dad crew chief this weekend. Now, Preston has had his dad in his ear before in the SCCA Spec Miatas for the past 8 years, which included two championships. But this weekend will mark something new for the father-son duo. Dan, Preston's dad, Dan, is going to serve as his crew chief in the Xfinity Series at Mid-Ohio for DGM Racing. That's really cool.
That is very cool. Now, we were originally going to have 20 minutes for Xfinity and 20 minutes for Cup Series, so we're going to go 15 and 15, okay, Jay?
Yep.
Okay, Jay Bruford competed on American Ninja Warrior. Now, the NASCAR Xfinity Series Sunoco Rookie of the Year candidate, Jade Buford, who was an avid climber and outdoor enthusiast, was featured as a competitor on the challenging courses of the popular television show American Ninja Warrior. The season 13 premiere aired on Monday, May the 31st at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and Buford has competed on the show twice before and was eliminated after the third round, third of four obstacles. Now, Buford made it through to the second round this time of qualifiers on speed, and he's going to compete in the next round, and that will take place on June the 7th. So just 4 days from now. So keep your eyes out for American Ninja Warrior and Jade Buford.
Nice. Josh Berry, not running for Junior Motorsports this weekend, but running for Jordan Anderson Racing. They announced this week that Josh Berry will drive the team's number 31 Chevrolet in the NASCAR Xfinity Series race at the Mid-Ohio this weekend. Berry, who's running the part-time schedule, as I mentioned, for Junior Motorsports, picked up his first career win at Martinsville earlier in the year, is a 10-year veteran of the Junior Motorsports Super Late Model program. He's also the 2020 NASCAR Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Series National Championship. Now, Berry is using this opportunity to get more road course experience and continue to improve the Jordan Anderson Racing Xfinity Series program. Number 31 will carry sponsorship from Anderson's longtime partner, Bomarito Automotive Group.
Yeah, it's worth noting that Jordan Anderson is Jennifer Anderson's brother. So that's the Jordan that they were talking about as far as following him on the racetrack throughout his career. Okay, let's take a look at the Sunoco rookie update here. After another win for rookie Ty Gibbs just last week in the Charlotte Motor Speedway, he has once again taken the lead from Junior Motorsports' Josh Berry in the Sunoco Rookie of the Year standings. Now, Gibbs has banked two wins this season, one at the Daytona Road Course and then again at Charlotte. He's only run in six of the 13 Xfinity Series events so far this season. So he has 238 points and three awards. Josh Berry, 227 points and four awards. And Ryan Vargas is at 110 and four awards. Jade Buford only has the 20 points. And Jordan Anderson and Sam Mayer, who are contenders, but they don't have any points yet because they've not been able to race yet. So Berry is holding on to second place in the rookie standings with the most awards won at four. He's 11 points behind Gibbs in 10 starts. So far this season, he has one win at Martinsville Speedway and three top five finishes and five top tens. He led 151 laps and has an average start of 15.2. JD Motorsports' Ryan Vargas is still sitting in third in the rookie standings with 110 points in 11 starts so far this season. He has his best finish of 16th at Charlotte Motor Speedway, which was just this past weekend. Jade Buford, I scrolled the wrong way here, joined the rookie party in the standings with 20 points. He in 12 starts so far this season, his best finish is the 15th at the Circuit of the Americas 2 weeks ago. He still sits ahead of Jordan Anderson and Sam Mayer, who both have not yet made a start in the series yet this season. So it will be interesting once they're able to do that.
Well, tying Ty Gibbs' win there into the bubble trouble, who's in and out in the Xfinity Series playoff. With Gibbs' victory at Charlotte Motor Speedway in the Xfinity Series, drivers for it fighting for their spot in the playoffs luckily didn't lose another chance to make their way in by a new winner. Currently, there's five drivers locked into the postseason on wins: Austin Cindric, Justin Allgaier, A.J. Allmendinger, Jeb Burton, and Myatt Schneider. That leaves seven spots in the field to either make it in with a win or on points. Now, after the race at COTA 2 weeks ago, Harrison Burton jumped to sixth in the standings, making him the highest-ranked driver without a win this season, taking the spot from Daniel Hemric, who had occupied that for the entire season. But bad luck hasn't stayed away from Hemric in the number 18, with a 29th-place finish at COTA and a 28th place finish last week at Charlotte due to an incident late in the race. Now, he still has a 137-point cushion between himself and the playoff cut line. Hemric's recent skid may end this weekend. He has made two starts at Mid-Ohio after posting an average finish of 2.5. The other jump was Joe Gibbs Racing's Brandon Jones, as he jumped ahead of Michael Annett after Charlotte and is currently in 11th, while Annett is now in the final transfer spot in 12th. And Brandon Brown is right there behind Annett in 13th. The two are only separated by 17 points. Now, Jones has made five starts at Mid-Ohio, posting a best finish of 10th, coming back in 2019, whereas Brown made his series track debut at Mid-Ohio in 2019 and finished 24th. So I went through the ones that are locked in, covered Harrison Burton, Daniel Hemric. In between there, you got Justin Haley, Jeremy Clements, Noah Gregson. Those are the 8th through 10th spot. Another one outside in 14th spot, Riley Herbst is at 252, so he's 40 points back, and then Ryan Sieg at 216. I think Sieg's going to have to look for a win. He could do it on a road course, though.
Yes, he's very good on those road courses. Speaking of that, the king of the road courses, Austin Cindric, has 11 career Xfinity Series wins, and four of those wins have come on road courses, including the last time they were out at a road course, the last time the circuit visited Mid-Ohio in 2019. Now, Cindric captured his road course Xfinity Series wins at Watkins Glen, Mid-Ohio, the Daytona Road Course, and Road America, but Mid-Ohio has seemed to be his playground in the last two races. In his two career starts, Cindric has sat on the pole both times. He's led a combined 105 of 150 laps, and he finished second in 2018 after leading 59 laps and after getting passed by Justin Allgaier during that final caution. Now, Cindric led 46 laps 2 years ago to win by more than 3 seconds. Colleague Racing's A.J. Allmendinger has 6 career NASCAR Xfinity Series wins, and 4 of those have come on road courses as well, including the inaugural race at Mid-Ohio in 2013. His first career win came at Road America also in 2013 from the pole position. He led 29 laps. His other two wins were at Charlotte Road Course in 2019 and 20, and in 2013 at Mid-Ohio. Allmendinger led a race-high 73 laps of 94 total en route to his victory. And most recently, in 2019, Allmendinger finished third at Mid-Ohio. So those were the first two picks out of the gate, I think, this week too, Jay.
Yeah, imagine that. And unfortunately, it was you and I that had them. And I was like, either way, I think I'm going to come out okay. Whichever one you take, I was taking the other one. Now, we mentioned the Mid-Ohio Sports Course road course here in Lexington, Ohio, did the Xfinity Series for the B&L Transport 170 Saturday, June 5th. It's going to be 75 laps or 169.35 miles. Stage 1 ends on lap 25, Stage 2 on lap 50. Now, the weekend starting lineup was determined by the metric qualifying, and as a result, Austin Cindric will start on the pole with rookie sensation Ty Gibbs starting on the front row outside of him. Harrison Burton, Jeb Burton, Justin Allgaier, Brandon Brown, Brandon Jones, Jeremy Clements, Riley Herbst, and Justin Haley make up the starting top 10. This will be the fifth time this season of 13 races that Cindric has led the field to green. This weekend's race at Mid-Ohio will be the eighth Xfinity Series race at the track. The first was in 2013, again, was won by A.J. Allmendinger, then driving for Team Penske. Most recently, road course ace and Team Penske driver Austin Cindric won at Mid-Ohio from the pole position back in 2019. Of the seven races run on the 2.258-mile road course, all seven have had different winners. 2018, Cindric became the youngest pole winner at the track at 19 years, 11 months, 9 days. Alex Tagliani is the oldest pole winner at 42 years, 9 months, and 28 days, coming in 2015. I mentioned Cindric went on to become the youngest race winner in 2019 as well. He was 20 years, 11 months, and 8 days. Sam Hornish is the oldest at 38 years, 1 month, and 10 days. Now, only two races have been run from the pole, 2017 and 19, and A.J. Allmendinger still holds the race record for the inaugural Xfinity Series race at Mid-Ohio back in 2013 at 77.724 miles per hour. At the series' most recent race at the track, 2019, there were 38 cars, 10 lead changes, 8 leaders, 6 cautions for 17 laps, and 22 cars finished on the lead lap at the conclusion. There were 27 running at the finish, and Cindric led 46 laps en route to his victory, with the margin of victory of 3.780 seconds. And last note here, Clements has run every race at Mid-Ohio in the Xfinity Series, making him the only driver to have competed in all 7 events. And with that, we should go move into the Cup Series here. You got the information on that, Sharon?
Yes, I do, and I apologize. I was on mute. What I was saying is that it's going to be tough for us to get all of it in the time that we have left here. So whatever we miss,
right,
Jay, I'll try to make sure I put it out on the website so that everybody
all
still
right
has the information. Okay, the NASCAR Cup Series Toyota Save Mart 350 is at Sonoma Raceway, and that will be this Sunday, June the 6th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. The coverage will be on Fox Sports 1 starting at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, and radio coverage on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll be racing a distance of 226.8 miles, that's 90 laps, and the first two stages are 20 laps apiece, and the final stage will be 50 laps, and it will end on lap 90. Now, there's some updates as far as post-pandemic opening up here.
Well, and if you want, I would just mention the tracks. Several tracks have restrictions lifted. The fan capacity increased as several tracks around the country announced updates. And you can check those out. As Sharon said, she'll post what we don't cover here. But just to let you know, it includes Daytona International Speedway, Phoenix Raceway, Talladega Super Speedway, Michigan International Speedway, Martinsville Speedway, Richmond Raceway, as well as Iowa Speedway. You can also find that information on jayski.com.
Okay. Also, there's going to be laps for charity on NASCAR Friday. Speedway Children's Charities will host laps for charity on Friday, June the 4th at Sonoma Raceway. The event allows part in the first ever laps for charity during the NASCAR weekend. This lead and follow session will consist of 3 spirited laps across the start-finish line and through the carousel on the 12th turn of this 2.52-mile road course. Participants and passengers must be at least 18 years of age in order to participate, and passengers must be from the same household. So there is a limit to just 3 passengers. Seat belts are required for each participant and passenger. NASCAR tickets are not required to run laps for charity on June the 4th. The event will be held with strict COVID-19 protocols in place, including social distancing and facial coverings. The cost is $225 per car, and all proceeds are going to benefit the Sonoma chapter of Speedway Children's Charities. There are 8 sessions available between 10:20 a.m. and 12:40 p.m. For questions and additional information, you can contact Sherry Plattner at Sonoma Raceway. So that's kind of a cool event that's going on as well.
I have done some things like that for a great cause, first of all, for Speedway Children's Charity, and a lot of fun, let me tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we got a note here. Fox Mike Joy is to go racing in Sonoma. As a Fox broadcaster, Mike Joy is going to trade his microphone for a steering wheel when he competes in the historic Trans Am Series at Sonoma Raceway June 5th and 6th. He'll take to the track in the number 89 1966 Ford Mustang, built and raced by Jim Whelan and Pete Dock. The car is owned by Ken Epsman of Saratoga and is prepared by McGee Motorsports at Sonoma Raceway. Joy has raced it previously in the Monterey Historics and won a historic Trans Am race in the rain at Lime Rock. The historic Trans Am Series hits the track Saturday morning. Practice will be at 9 a.m., qualifying at 10:30, and then a 30-minute timed race at 1 p.m. The action will kick off with warm-up laps at 9:15, followed by another 30-minute feature at 10:30 a.m. prior to the Toyota Save Mart 350 NASCAR Cup Series main event at 1 p.m. So that's kind of cool to see him behind the wheel.
Yes, indeed. Okay, also, it was announced earlier this week that the championship weekend is going to return to Phoenix Raceway next year. The Valley of the Sun and Phoenix Raceway will once again host the NASCAR Championship Weekend from November 4th to the 6th of 2022. They first hosted the Sports Pinnacle events in 2020 and is scheduled to count on 4 champions in 3 days for the second consecutive season this fall from November 5th to the 7th. Now, the 2020 Championship Weekend will again feature culminating events in the Cup Series, Xfinity, Camping World Truck Series, and the ARCA Menards Series West. So that was pretty cool news for everybody to hear this year, this week.
Some other cool news. We have another Cup Series debut, and that's going to be Ben Rhodes. He's going to drive for Spire Motorsports at Sonoma. He's a NASCAR Camping World Truck Series star driving for Thor Sports Racing. He's going to make his Cup Series debut at the road course at Sonoma for the number 77 Spire Motorsports Chevrolet. Rhodes, age 24, from Louisville, Kentucky, is currently second in the Camping World Truck Series driver standings after posting 2 wins on the year, including the Daytona road course. Rhodes will be paired with crew chief Kevin Bellicourt this weekend. Rhodes will become the 5th different driver to make a start in the number 77 Spire Motorsports Chevrolet this season, joining Justin Haley, who has 12 starts, Josh Berry 1, Stuart Friesen 1, and Jamie McMurray with 1. The best finish of the number 77 car this season was an 8th place finish in the season opener Daytona 500 when it was driven by Jamie McMurray.
Okay, now we'll talk about the road course ringers to watch on Sunday. And, you know, it takes a special talent, and drivers are constantly tested each and every lap on a road course to not only navigate the many different turns, but also to wrestle the stock car that glides underneath their fingertips. As of late, several Cup competitors have learned to master the balance of road racing competition to earn their way into victory lane. 9 former Cup road course winners are entered this weekend for the Toyota Save Mart 350 at Sonoma, led by Hendrick Motorsports Series driver Chase Elliott with 6 road course victories. 2 drivers in the Joe Gibbs Racing camp looking to not see Elliott get his 7th road course win this weekend are Martin Truex Jr., who leads the series among active drivers in wins at Sonoma with 3. There's also Kyle Busch, who also has multiple Sonoma wins with two. Both drivers have four Cup Series road course wins to their career and are looking for their fifth win this weekend. Truex is going for his third consecutive victory at Sonoma this weekend. Busch won was the one to win last at Sonoma in 2015 and finished runner-up to Truex at the 2.52-mile configuration in 2019. Also, don't count out their Joe Gibbs Racing teammates, Denny Hamlin, who also has a road course win at Watkins Glen in 2016, and Christopher Bell, who grabbed his first career win earlier this season at the Daytona road course. Hamlin finished fifth in 2019 at Sonoma. Bell will be making his series track debut at the track this weekend. There's also Stewart Haas Racing's Kevin Harvick. Like series driver standings leader Denny Hamlin, he's still looking for his first win of the season. Sonoma could be the place that he gets it. Harvick is the most recent Cup Series winner at Sonoma, not named Truex. He hoisted the trophy in 2017, and in his 19 career starts at the track, he has posted one win, six top fives, and 10 top tens, tied with Kurt Busch for the most top tens among active drivers. Harvick finished sixth at Sonoma in 2019. Speaking of Kurt Busch from Chip Ganassi Racing, he's the only other former road course winner entered this weekend that has won at Sonoma Raceway in the Cup Series, and that was 2011. Busch is still looking for his first win of the season, but has found success on road courses, finishing fourth on the Daytona road course earlier this year. Busch finished 13th at Sonoma in 2019, which was the last time the series competed at that track. So I think we pretty much covered everybody's wins, so I'm not going to go over that chart, Jay. We'll just go on to the next topic.
I noticed you left the singing for me here. We got the Beach Boys. several drivers enthused to head home to California. I wish they all could be California drivers. How'd that do? Let's not rank that. Never mind. As the NASCAR Cup Series heads west to California, several of the competitors are looking forward to racing in front of their home state fans, and they will have fans. That's good news. Now, over NASCAR's history, 450 different drivers with their home state recorded as California have competed in at least one NASCAR National Series race. Of the 450 Californian drivers in NASCAR, 43 have put up at least one win in one of the three NASCAR National Series. In total, there are five drivers from California entered in this weekend's Sonoma Raceway, the Toyota Save Mart 350. Mentioned Stewart Haas Racing's Kevin Harvick comes out of Bakersfield, California, leads all Californians in NASCAR National Series win. He has 119 victories, third most in NASCAR all-time behind Kyle Busch at 217 and Richard Petty at 200. Now, Harvick is the last driver from California to win at Sonoma Raceway, taking the checkered flag back in 2017. His Stewart Haas Racing teammate Cole Custer is from Ladero Ranch, California. Custer will be making his series track debut at Sonoma this weekend, looking for his first win of the season. Wood Brothers' Matt DiBenedetto, he's from Grass Valley, California, and has had Sonoma circled on his schedule since the series last visited the track in 2019. In his last start at Sonoma, DiBenedetto showcased his skills, starting 19th and scoring a top five finish when he placed fourth. Now, Hendrick Motorsports driver Kyle Larson, he hails from Elk Grove, California. Thanks to the Metric qualifying, the driver of the number five Chevrolet will be starting from the pole for the fourth consecutive time at Sonoma Raceway. Larson has won the pole the last three times the series has competed, but has yet to translate that to a victory. His best finish at his hometown track is 10th, coming back in 2019. And finally, we got Richard Childress Racing's Tyler Reddick is from Corning, California. Reddick has been hot as of late, putting up seven top 10 finishes in his last nine races of this season. Reddick will be making his series track debut at Sonoma this weekend.
Okay, and speaking of Roderick, there is a playoff goal in the NASCAR Cup Series driver standings, and Reddick Buescher expand their points cushion at Charlotte. The playoff bubble was red hot with drivers swapping the last few eligible postseason spots every week. But a lot has happened since then, including several big points day for RCR's Tyler Reddick and Roush Fenway's Chris Buescher, who are looking pretty secure on the points at the moment. But residing along the playoff cut line exposes you to the chance of a new winner bumping them out of contention. Now, following the Cup Series race at Richmond in April, both Tyler Reddick and Chris Buescher were outside the top 16 in the driver point standings with a mountain of points ahead of them. Since then, both drivers have methodically placed consistent finishes every week and slowly climbed their way back into contention. By Darlington in May, both drivers had earned their way back into the top 16 in points. And then after top 10 finishes by Reddick and Buescher in the Coca-Cola 600 just this past weekend, Reddick now sits 15th in the playoff outlook with a south 61 points up on the postseason cut line. Buescher is 16th with a come cut line. Now, just outside the Cup Series, playoff cutoff is Wood Brother Racing Matt DiBenedetto. He's 17th. He's 55 points back from Buescher. In the Cup Series last outing at Sonoma, DiBenedetto ran lights out. He started 19th and raced his way up to a top five finish, which was a fourth. The impressive finish sparked a 10 race a run last season that he scored six top 10 finishes in, and he earned his way into the playoffs for the first time in his career. So Sonoma could once again be the catalyst for DiBenedetto to right the ship and position himself for a run in the playoffs. Reddick is making a series track debut at Sonoma Raceway, and Buescher's best Sonoma finish is 12th. That was back in 2018. So those are three drivers to keep your eye on this weekend as well.
Well, to win that, they're going to have to go through the road ace himself, and that's Chase Elliott. He's an early favorite on any road course, because when it comes to road course racing in the NASCAR Cup Series, Hendrick Motorsports driver Chase Elliott instantly mentioned as one of the favorites to watch, and with good reason. Elliott has won five of the last six road course races the NASCAR Cup Series has competed at, including the most recent at the Circuit of Americas a few weeks ago. Six of the 2020 Series champions' 12 career cup wins have come on road courses: Watkins Glen in 2018 and 19, the Charlotte Roval in 19 and 20, the Daytona Road Course in 2020, and now the Circuit of Americas in 2021. With his latest foray into the victory lane at the Circuit of Americas, Elliott has locked up his sixth road course win, and with it ties a bevy of NASCAR historic figures, Bobby Allison, Richard Petty, Ricky Rudd, and Rusty Wallace, for third on the all-time NASCAR Cup Series road course wins list. If Elliott were to win this weekend and get his seventh victory, he would move solely into third all-time in Cup Series road course wins, just one shy away from NASCAR Hall of Famer Tony Stewart in second with 8 points. And there again, you can check out a chart with all the drivers with their wins and where they've gotten them at. Jayski and Sharon will put up that information as well. Last note here, Elliott has made 4 starts at Sonoma, posting 1 top 5 and 2 top 10s.
Okay. Now, this next stuff you can watch for on NASCAR, fanforracing.com. And I might try to see if I can combine these next two topics. Joe Gibbs Racing's Martin Truex Jr. looking for his third straight Sonoma victory. And then also the NASCAR Cup Series, the fact that they're returning to California's Sonoma Raceway, and how exciting that is. It gives a little bit of the history there. So at least one or two articles there that will be up on Fan for Racing, hopefully sometime tomorrow or definitely before the race on Sunday. So you can watch for those. We are at the top of the hour, Jay, and that means it's time for NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. I don't think we're going to have anybody joining us here tonight, so you and I will be able to get right into it start talking about our hot topics for tonight. I'll let you kick it off.
All right. Well, first off, I know I got cut off again, unfortunately, early on Tuesday night, I believe it was. What was the topic you guys talked about following Ty Gibbs in the Xfinity Series?
Let me take a look here, because I'm not going to remember that.
Okay.
Let's see.
Did you talk about Phoenix being confirmed for the 2022 championship?
Yeah, I think we mentioned it as a news story. We talked about Eddie DeHaan. Were you there for that?
Okay. No,
I
was not.
We talked about the Truck Series not going to Canadian Tire Motorsports Park. They're going to be at Darlington instead.
Okay.
Let's see.
Yeah, and those were some of the older ones we had. I kind of figured that was the direction you went. Just to give quick thoughts on that, it's unfortunate for Canadian Tire Motorsports Park. And I think I might even been the one to put that up under the Hot Topics list, because as I was going through our Fan for Racing Fantasy group, I saw that was on the schedule, and I knew they weren't doing a whole lot as of yet. So that didn't come as a shock to me. It is sad, and I hope that they do return there as soon as they are able, because the Canadian fans, some of the greatest, that is some of the greatest racing we've seen in the Truck Series is on that track. So hopefully they do get to return there. Giving it to Darlington, obviously not a bad choice when Darlington is your backup. So those are my quick thoughts on that.
Okay, and then Mike and I had diametrically opposed views about Dale Jr.'s claims that teams will and need to cheat. I think you know how I feel about that.
I think I'm the one that put that up. I was a little appalled. Yeah, I was the one that posted that. That's appalling to me that he would make that kind of claim. And I'm kind of in the middle. I know you and I have had multiple discussions about this. I understand the pushing it to the edge. I do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it goes under that the old adage, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, which I believe is one of the phrases that maybe that Hal Earnhardt worded it. To me, at least if you're in a situation like that, especially as a team owner in the Xfinity Series, possibly looking to move to Cup, you should have at least worded it differently. We're going to work in the gray area. We're going to try and get every advantage we can.
Mm-hmm.
That was my thing. Now, I am with you, and I do think NASCAR, if they really want to crack down, and I think they've made some strides in that, make the penalty hurt. Don't be like, okay, we're going to fine you $10,000 because we caught you doing something we don't like. No, make it count,
mm-hmm.
make it hurt. And I think they have taken steps in that direction, and they need to adhere to that no matter who it is that they catch, no matter what the situation is. And I do think they've gotten better about that. So I'm with you. If crew chiefs can get it to within a half inch over, they can get it a half inch under. But I also understand that competitiveness of we got to get every tenth of an inch, because we've seen how much that matters. I mean, some of these races we've seen, you know, it's that split second on pit road, getting on and off pit road, coming to the line, especially at your super speedways, you know, that bumper or whatever. So I understand trying to get everything you can. And I would never condone cheating, but I understand pushing it right up to the limit, but if you go over, be prepared to pay the cost, and the cost needs to be hefty enough where it highly encourages you not to do it no more.
I would 100% agree. The last thing I want to do is be crowning a champion who got there by cheating, and for the sport to kind of condone it by saying that that's kind of the way it's always been, and we want to keep it that way. I was thinking about this, and I really think NASCAR needs to give these guys an outlet for coming up with ideas. If they've got ideas that can make the car go faster, Why not give them an outlet for sharing that information with NASCAR and letting NASCAR make the decision about whether or not they can make it legal? And I think if there's an outlet or a way that they can do that and kind of share the information, I understand that teams want to have the competitive edge with it. Maybe there's a way that they can share that information with NASCAR, and you know, they're the first ones that can go out there and test it with NASCAR's blessing, if you will. But there needs to be an avenue for them to do that that it makes it more legitimate, if you will, and less like it's a cheating thing that they're doing. I'm just throwing an idea out there. How that looks, I don't know, but off the top of my head, that's what I think is if NASCAR could put together some kind of a way for people to come up with their ideas and be able to implement those ideas.
I find it rather intriguing the way you put that. If you're going to try something new or push something that's in a gray area, you know, it's one of those of, again, going back to an old saying of it's easier to ask for forgiveness after than permission before.
Yeah.
But that might be the route to go, especially, again, like I said, if the penalty is hefty enough, that might be something they go towards of, hey, we're going to try working in this area. What exactly is our limits? What can we get away with? Because it's not very clear here. Or, you know, we want to try and push something here. Yeah, it's an intriguing idea, Sharon. It's definitely a thought. I don't know where everybody would fall in line with it because, like you said, if they are trying something, they want to keep it a secret from everybody else first off, and second off, if they're really not sure and it might be a penalty, but then again, like you said, you find out first. If they say, hey, definitely not, you know, we know, no messing with the engine, no messing with the tires. NASCAR's always been very clear on that. So obviously you wouldn't go to them with anything in that area. But, yeah, a certain fender push or something like that, that it might work. That actually is kind of interesting.
It was just a thought. It just seems like, you know, it just seems like the wrong route to go to kind of condone the whole cheating idea within NASCAR simply because that's what we were founded on or that's what our culture has always been. I think those are weak arguments in favor of cheating and totally the wrong message that we want to send to the next generation of people coming up. It's not the message I would want to send to my kids or to my grandkids.
You know, the ironic thing is, and I know this always comes up as the counter argument to it, is on most things, and I'll say most, and I don't have the rule book to tell you which rules are which, but most things, pre-race is one thing, post-race is another, and they give that tolerance. The one I know I can testify to is the speed limit on pit road. If it's 50 miles an hour, they give them up to 55. So you have a 4.999, you know, and they take every advantage of that and then still go over. That's where I understand where people are like, why are you even questioning the penalty? You were already over the 50 limit. You were in the tolerance or extra NASCAR was giving you. So I fully understand that. If you've already been given, but that's how competitive it is. Like I said, they're going that 4.99999 over as long as they can and then let off quick before the timing line. You know, we've seen that, so... Yeah, I don't have a lot of sympathy when they do get caught.
I agree. Part of it, though, too, Jay, I think, is that a lot of these guys feel like it also advances the sport when they find that competitive edge. And you know, kind of it gives them that competitive edge, obviously, but without them testing those boundaries and going beyond those boundaries, a lot of people think that there wouldn't be a chance for NASCAR to develop into something else. So I get that to a certain degree. I just think it's wrong to do it in a way that it feels like they're cheating and getting a competitive advantage over their their competitors. The other point that I made the other night is that if you feel a need to cheat, it tells me two things. It tells me that you don't have confidence in your driver or your car to be able to do it legitimately, so you got to go outside of the boundaries and do it illegally. And that's just not a good feeling to me. I would rather have confidence in my driver to be able to do it within the boundaries, to be able to go out there and go after that win, than to count on doing something illegally to make that happen. I think, and it's a lack of respect to your competitors, to feel like you're someone special, that you can get by with it. And the other guys are kind of suckers if they're not trying to do the same thing. I think that's a total disrespect for the sport and for your competitors. And in a lot of ways, it's disrespectful to your driver if you take it a step further there, because you're saying that your driver can't do it without you doing something illegal.
You definitely make some very interesting and strong points on that side of it, for sure. And, yeah, you're right. I did know that was definitely where your stance was on it all the way.
Mhm. Yeah, and I just don't want to. That's the way it's always been for me, and I don't see any reason to change it at this point. Okay, let's go ahead and go from here, Jay. For our next hot topic. Did I lose Jay? Oh no. Hold on, let me look. Oh, I did. Okay, folks, unfortunately, Hot Topics is going to be cut short tonight because, unfortunately, we lost Jay. And I think, well, actually, Jay, he can still call back in at this point. So hopefully Jay's going to call back in here, and we'll still be able to hear from him. I'm going to send a message real quick and make sure he knows that he can still call back in. Maybe he already has. Let me look. Nope, not yet. Okay, I'm going to send him a message and see if we can't get him to call back in. I don't know what's going on with my computer. Okay. Okay, so we're going to try to get Jay Huseman back here and see if we can't get him to call back into the show. We still have about 16 minutes, almost 17 minutes left of the show, so hopefully he'll be able to call back in and we'll be able to get his hot topic. I'll kind of go down the list here and see if, let's see, what are some of the topics we have on the list here? Let's see, hot topics. Jay Huseman, truck qualifying at Charlotte. If they had qualified 36 start to go home, they rained out and all 38 started. I don't understand it. That's one of the things that he put on the list of topics for us to talk about. And there he is. He is back.
I am so sorry about that. My phone has an internal heating issue, and it shuts down on me. So, yeah, this time of night, we've been on for coming up on the two-hour mark again. I try to keep it cool. I don't know what else to do with it.
For a minute, but, I panicked. I thought, oh, no, he's not going to be able to call back in, and we're going to have to cut the show short. But then I realized we're still within the time frame that you can still call back in.
That's what happened Tuesday night, and I had a minute to try and call back in, but I had to reset it twice in order to get it back operational. If I'd only had to reset it once, I was good. finishing up on what I was saying with the rules. If they give teams an area where they say, okay, you got a wider box. It's not a hard set here. We'll give you a little bit of leeway. But there again, you know, teams do it to themselves. I think back to when the what I can't remember what the official term to what they call it, but they were shifting the rear end of the body and the cars were crab walking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give them a little bit of room, but yeah, there's got to be an outside limit. And they pushed it on that. I remember seeing that cars couldn't even pull into their garage stalls because the body wasn't straight enough with the frame that it would go into the garage stall. And I think it was Darrell Waltrip watching them on the straightaways when they called it crab walking because, yeah, that rear end was shifted so far. But so there again, give them a little window to be within and work within it versus putting a block on it of a hard, you have to have it here. I could see something like that. Like you said, give them an option or at least the opportunity to say, hey, can we try this? With that before it becomes a penalty. But, again, at the end of the day, you have to have some rules, regulations, everything we have does, so, and you got to be within it. So,
unfortunately, rules are in place because people cheat. And,
right, yeah.
It's the few that create the rule for the many. So it's just kind of the way it has been. But I would like to see NASCAR kind of transition away from this cultural thing of it's just part of the culture and so we're going to do it. I think it's a problem.
And I do think they have kind of gone away from that. So I heard you mention when we were talking about some of the other hot topics there, the truck qualifying, going back to Charlotte, the truck qualifying, did you hear, I don't know if you got a chance to watch that race when it was live, qualifying for it. Did you hear about this?
No, I did not. So enlighten me.
During the broadcast, they were talking about it when it was raining and whether or not truck qualifying would get in or if they were going to have to call it off because of rain. There were 38 trucks there. If they qualified and got their times in, they would take 36 and send two home. If it got rained out, they were letting all 38 start. And I didn't understand it, and I still don't. And if you hadn't even heard about it, I guess you don't have anything to enlighten me.
Okay, well, I guess, yeah, that's kind of weird that they did that because I'm trying to think if I've ever heard of them doing that before. And off the top of my head, I can't think of a time that they ever did that before. The only thing I can think of, Jay, is there's been all this conversation about Jordan Anderson not being able to race because there hasn't been any qualifying that would give him that opportunity to do so. So maybe this was NASCAR's way. And I don't even know if Jordan did race this weekend, didn't he?
That issue isn't in the truck series, though, because there he has
That's
been racing.
Actually in the Xfinity.
It was the Xfinity series, right. And I don't know, I know for the Xfinity, or for the Cup series, the limit's 40. I don't know what it is in the truck series. And I've seen this before, and I got to go back to my dirt track experience. If your field limit is 24, and you have 25 cars there, they'll give that provisional and start that one extra if the track owner is willing to, or a sponsor is willing to put up the money for that place to start. Okay, so it be only being two extra trucks, I understand that they said, hey, you didn't even get the opportunity to try. We'll go ahead and let the extra two start if that's the case. If they had the field set at 36, but they said, okay, we didn't get qualifying in, you didn't even get the chance to race your way in, but to me, then, that needs to be clarified. Where's that limit? Is it 2, 3, 4? Does it matter who they are? You know, you're playing a tricky game there again of that.
Yeah, and I can't think of a precedent for it. I mean, maybe there is, and I'm just not aware of it. But can you think of a precedent for that, where they've done that before?
Not in that manner. You know, NASCAR did used to have it where, especially at the Cup level, it was 40 on qualifying and then 3 provisionals, 2 on points, 1 past champion. If past champion wasn't needed, it also was points. But they identified that. You know, now we have it where, okay, it's identified, whether we like it or agree with it, which I don't, 36 are locked in, 40 start, only 4 get to qualify in. But, yeah, at this level, I've never seen anything like that. I think this is kind of maybe setting a precedent of that, hey, if we can't qualify and there's only, whether it be two, three, I think they would need to specify that, then, hey, we'll let it slide because you didn't get the opportunity up to so many. But then you get into, okay, if there's more than that set amount, who gets in? You know, you still got to have the rules mm-hmm. to it or identify so that, you know, I'd hate to see it be a random draw or a fan vote. You know, for certain things, those are acceptable. I know for the iRacing, mm-hmm. they do the fan vote, the All-Star. But one like this, I'd hate to see it come down to something like that because that really isn't fair then, you know, depending on who it is.
Okay. So, yeah, very, very interesting there. Unfortunately, I'm not one to watch a lot of qualifying to begin with. I usually check the results and see how they qualified, but with my schedule being what it is, I just have other things that I need to be doing during that time. So I did not catch that had happened. So thank you for bringing that to our attention.
I say it just caught me so off guard, and I'm one that I record it. And again, I was on vacation this weekend. You know, I come back home and I don't sleep a lot. I spend my nights watching this. So yeah, I went back. We got back Monday. We're talking about qualifying from Friday for a truck race. I had already known the results. I'm a race fan, yeah. I want to watch
yeah.
it, you know. And that goes back to I'm in favor of bringing qualifying back.
Exactly. Nothing wrong with that. Okay, so I don't really have a whole lot more to say about it because it just seems like we covered the situation, and maybe somebody's asked NASCAR that question, why they did it. Have you seen anything on social media?
I hadn't seen it, and that's the thing. I couldn't find anything on social media where anybody else even asked that question or addressed it. So I don't know if they slipped it in there and just hope nobody noticed or not. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'll wait and see. I know I only put that one up at like 8 o'clock tonight. We'll see if Mike chimes in later on tonight or in the morning when he gets to it, what his thoughts
okay.
on it are.
Well, I put this one up. William Byron is going to be driving this at Nashville Speedway for Rackley War to field the number 27 Chevrolet Silverado. Sorry, I couldn't quite get that out. And the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. And we heard Austin Self talking about that, you know, how many of the Cup Series drivers have been racing in the Truck Series this weekend, making it very highly competitive. But what are your thoughts about William Byron going back to the Truck Series for this team?
Well, I had a couple of thoughts, and I knew that was on the list when Austin mentioned it. I don't know if it's how he said it. I got the impression all the drivers talk about they do like it because they learn from them. However, he very specifically said in the Truck Series, it's always Kyle Busch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's cool for some different ones, and I know we got Chase Elliott coming up one in the trucks at Texas, I believe. To have
mm-hmm.
a different driver, okay, that is entering in, that they can learn from, pick their brain and lean on and learn from. I think with William Byron, and I don't know this, this is from my perspective, I think at Nashville, being that we've talked about this, of that is a target area NASCAR is trying to break into, there's some discussion
mm-hmm.
between it being at the Nashville Speedway versus the fairgrounds. I think some of that might be, in my opinion, of getting some names there to draw attention and move
mm-hmm.
that forward in that market. I really think that might have something to do with it, with it being
that.
William Byron. Yeah, you're talking about, I know he didn't win that Truck Series championship. In my mind, he did. That was one of those of I feel so bad for him. You know, blown engine in the race before the cutoff into the final four. He was just outside of it. He won that final race and would have been the champion had he been in the final four. So I consider him a champion. He just didn't get the trophy.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. That was one of the thoughts that I had, considering that it's Nashville Super Speedway. I feel bad for Timothy Peters that he was let go from that team. I know he wasn't getting the results that we've known Timothy Peters to get in the past. But when you bring a driver like William Byron, and I'm sure Kyle Busch would draw people there too. William Byron's an up-and-coming star in this sport. He's having a stellar season with Hendrick Motorsports this year. And my thought too was that this is going to be a driver that's going to pull some fans into the stands there at Nashville Super Speedway, where NASCAR is trying to make a statement that they want to bring that back into the schedule. I think for all three series. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But it is good to see other drivers besides Martin Truex, or besides Kyle Busch, be the drivers that are going into the Camping World Truck Series. And I hope we see other drivers come into the series. I think part of what Austin was talking about is the high competitive nature of that series, because it is highly competitive. But he makes a good point. It does make it challenging to be able to get on the positive side of that cut line. But they still got five races to make it happen. We'll see what happens.
Now, you brought something up, and I hadn't made that connection or noticed it. I had seen the story that Timothy Peters was let go. When this one came out, I did not pick up that it was that team that he was driving for, that William Byron was driving for. So that actually adds a level to my thought then of, if they weren't where they wanted to be with Timothy Peters, bringing in an experienced and top-notch, not that Timothy Peters is not, let me rephrase that, but a proven winner and champion up at the Cup level, to evaluate their program, I think is a good move then from that aspect. I didn't realize that was the same team that Timothy Peters had been released from. And I was also, like you, sad to see that. I know we were excited when he was able to come back to the series.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We're coming up on that point of the show, Sal. Sorry, Jay. We're coming up on that point of the show where we do an announcement for our first-time listeners so that nobody is caught by surprise. We're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, but we do continue recording the rest of our conversation, so you may hear us mid-sentence as we're going off the air. Just know that recording is happening. And you can hear the rest of the conversation as part of our bonus overtime material on the podcast. What I do is I go out on Twitter and I let people know that the podcast is available. And what you can do at that point is just fast forward to the two-hour mark, and then you can hear the rest of the conversation, as I mentioned earlier, as part of the bonus overtime material. Podcast listeners will be able to listen straight through, but again, we don't want to take anybody by surprise with not knowing what's going on, just to let, again, those first-time listeners know what's going on here. Okay, anything more that you wanted to say there, Jay?
Not on that topic. We'll have to see if what other drivers, as they move forward, bring in a rotation, or if they settle on a different one. I know Ty Majeski's got a couple of starts. He'd be one I'd like to see back in a truck full time. So they have some options for sure.
Grant Enfinger.
Grant Enfinger looking for, yep, you're right. I know he's been filling in with Cody Robaugh. So it'll be interesting to see if we see a rotation of drivers that, like I said, that might be part of that as well, not just in the Nashville target area, but them just trying to get some other drivers to evaluate their program.
That's very possible. Okay, what's our next topic, Jay? I don't know why I've got Sal on my mind all of a sudden.
I'm gonna use kind of a lead-in. If we're talking about teams pushing the envelope and developing and everything else, We got GM opening a technical center in Charlotte, in the hub there. I know Mike put on there that they announced this a few years ago. The clearly progress has been slow, keeping in mind COVID came into play there. But they did break ground on it, and I thought they said that the plan is sometime in 2022.
Yes, it's going to be a 130,000 square foot facility, and will expand on GM's performance and racing capabilities. Three representatives from Chip Ganassi Racing, Richard Childress Racing, and Hendrick Motorsports joined GM for their groundbreaking in Concord, North Carolina. So the facility is $45 million investment for GM, and it is scheduled to open early in 2022. So it's kind of interesting that they're doing this, and maybe this is an indication that they want to work closer with NASCAR on what they can do to enhance the performance of their cars. So I see this as a really good move, Jay. I think this is a good sign of them wanting to work directly with NASCAR. And, you know, NASCAR has a research and development center down there as well. And this puts them in close proximity, and the communication lines, I think, will be a lot stronger with them being right there in the area.
Well, I just jokingly put it from that aspect of the pushing the limit side, but there is something to that, obviously, with a technical center like that, that's part of their planning. The thing I look back on is when Toyota came in, they came in as an organization, as a manufacturer, truly Toyota team. And I think they set the standard and the bar for that. Ford has kind of picked up on that, and it seemed like Chevy was lacking. They had three or four Chevrolet teams, but they weren't one Chevrolet team trying to get the best for all four. It was each of the four working individually on whatever they could. And I think we see that now with Hendrick Motorsports bringing the Chevy back to the forefront and being dominant this year. And I know Chip Ganassi and Richard Childress haven't quite picked up to where they were with that. But I think that might be the focus, is that GM is saying, hey, Toyota did it as a Toyota manufacturer. We want to do that as Chevrolet. Because like I said, I feel like Ford kind of did in between the two, that they were the next to follow Toyota's lead in that.
Yes, and in fact, I mentioned the three team owners that are really involved with this and kind of joined the groundbreaking ceremonies. Richard Childress, the owner of Richard Childress Racing, his comment is that Chevrolet is taking a big step in creating a best-in-class technical center to further increase resources and collaboration. Having a central hub for vehicle simulation, aero development, engineering support in the heart of NASCAR is going to make us even stronger. It's so important to stay on top of technology, and Chevrolet is making a key statement on their commitment to performance and with this groundbreaking today. Now, that also tells me that Chevrolet is, I almost had a feeling when I first read this, is that they're moving kind of the hub of Detroit is moving to the hub of Charlotte and racing. So that kind of confirms it there, too, with the comments from Richard Childress. But Chip Ganassi also had something to say. He said the new technical center that GM is building shows a great commitment, or a real commitment, to their racing programs and partner teams in particular. All the new technology, tools, and equipment will allow us to collaborate more effectively and efficiently across all three series that we partner with them on, NASCAR, IMSA, and Extreme E. So it's not just for NASCAR, but it's for these other series that Chevrolet or GM races in as well. Rick Hendrick, the owner of Hendrick Motorsports, his comment, Hendrick Motorsports has raced with Chevrolet since we opened the doors in 1984, said Rick Hendrick. I've never seen them more committed to our sport and to be and to the performance of their partners' teams than they are today. The investment that General Motors is making right here in Charlotte sends area sends a clear message about the importance of auto racing to their brand and their passion for competing and winning at the highest levels. We share Chevrolet's commitment and take the immense pride in partnering with them on and off the racetrack. So I think those comments from the team owners are really important for everybody to be aware of as well, because this is where a lot of that innovation is going to take place. But I also think part of it has to do with they're going to be close to NASCAR too and be able to have an open communication with them. At least that's a hope from my perspective.
Well, and normally it is Mike that I say chases the black helicopters and wild theories that pop into his head. But I'll go ahead and say I came with this myself there. Is this an indication, though, that there may be a new manufacturer coming that Chevrolet is saying, hey, we're committed to our teams. We don't want to lose any of them to a new manufacturer that's coming in?
Oh, interesting thought. yeah. Interesting thought, because it certainly these three owners seem to be pretty excited about the technology center being there.
That as you were reading through some of their statements is what made me like, hey, we're a united team, you know. And I thought competitive wise, since Toyota did what they did, but all of a sudden that popped in and be like, if there's a new manufacturer coming in, some of these teams are going to want to be the top team in that organization or that manufacturer, that they might jump ship. That GM mm-hmm. saying, hey, we want to keep our teams, you know.
That's
it's a
point.
Thought anyway.
Okay. And timing is everything to Mike's point of it being announced some time ago, and they're finally making it happen.
Yeah, well, and I say that could have been a lot of different things. COVID obviously playing a part in it, and I don't remember exactly when they came forth with the plan or intent on that, but also that is one of those of – to put the deal together and get everybody on the same page mm-hmm. to start it, you know, is an ordeal. You know, you're talking about a $45 million investment. Once you have it and secured it and are ready to go, having it ready in early 22, that's an easy fix. We got construction teams that are willing to take bonuses to get it done. So I don't know that delay was anything other than getting all the T's crossed and I's dotted, if you will.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Okay, but good timing, nonetheless.
Yeah, I just, like I said, the coincidental timing of, and we still haven't heard anything official on that, of a new manufacturer, but that rumor has been out there for quite a while now, and this would be, 2022 would be the year for it to happen with the next-gen car.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't see any other new topics, unless you do. Did you see any other new topics, or do you have any other new ones?
No, the only other one, and I couldn't find it back. I didn't get a chance to post it this morning. I cannot even cite the source, but one of the racing sites had an article up kind of following up on, we talked about Kurt Busch possibly going to Denny Hamlin, the 2311 team. This one then went to an article on five replacements for Kurt Busch at Chip Ganassi Racing, which makes me wonder if it hasn't been decided that Kurt Busch was leaving Chip Ganassi. Again, I've seen nothing official, and I wish I could have found it back. I couldn't even find back. I don't remember what I was busy, and I glanced at it and read through the drivers. Some of the drivers there were rather interesting. Some of the ones we threw out possibly to the 2311. I remember Matt DiBenedetto as well as Noah Gregson being the final one if they wanted to go out on a limb and try and build the future and bring Noah Gregson in as two mm-hmm. of the five that were listed. But I was just wondering if you're the only one here with me tonight, but if you had heard anything more on an official or more rumor hearing that Kurt Busch was indeed done at Chip Ganassi Racing.
Nothing officially. I will say it's. I have not heard anything officially. I'm going to go to Twitter here and see a couple of my sources and see if they have posted anything.
Josh Berry was another one. That was the other one besides Gregson a young driver. Would be switching out of Junior Motorsports. But staying within the Chevrolet camp. And again, if we're talking about it being, I know Hendrick and Chip Ganassi have an alliance. I don't know how that would stretch to a driver alliance, being that Josh Berry has been running under Junior Motorsports. But he is making that, and it followed up because he was making his Cup debut this weekend for Spire Motorsports. And then possibly that being an opportunity to get his name in the hat anyway at Chip Ganassi Racing, if Kurt Busch mm-hmm. were to be leaving.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is speculation at this point. I'm not seeing anything from any of the bigger names, you know, media names,
okay.
That says that Kurt Busch is definitely leaving. I think it's all speculation at this point. And we're going to have to wait, I guess, until we get official word on some of this.
And that is how silly season goes for sure. But that's the second one to come out. And I don't know if it was kind of a follow-up, being that the other one had come out of Kurt Busch being a top candidate for 2311, if they followed that up with, hey, if that does happen, here's who we think should go in at Chip Ganassi Racing. And again, that one wasn't a confirmed. Denny Hamlin didn't exactly deny it, but he didn't say it was true that they were talking to him either. So, nor that they even have a second team coming, but that's always kind of been the plan. You know, I don't think they've ever denied that. They just said, you know, we will when the time is right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And unfortunately, that's what we all kind of have to wait for, is when that time is right for them to come out with their announcement. You know, a lot of times, what happens is that, you know, one domino has to fall before another domino can fall. So they can't really make an announcement without giving something else away. So they're waiting
right.
for other announcements to happen before they can make those announcements. So I suspect that that's part of what's going on here. I'm going to bring up a new topic. Oh, I'm sorry. You said something you wanted to say.
No, Mike's not here for me to take a bet on of which one we think is going to get announced first. You know, we kind of have a strong indication it's Brad Keselowski going to Roush Fenway, which would start it. There now, mm-hmm. see, now I'm hooking them all together. Ryan Newman was another name to possibly go to Chip Ganassi, stay within the go back to the mm-hmm. Chevrolet camp as a veteran, because he's made the statement he's not done racing. In response to,
or he could be going to the. Oh yeah, never mind.
Right, he could go to Toyota with the 2311. Again, there are a couple of seats that will be available. We know we've heard some rumors of other new teams, but that was another name that I think was on that list of five.
Okay, I'm going to move on to a new topic here. I did not watch it, but I'm curious to know if you did. The street race in Chicago for iRacing. You know, with the iRacing that's been going on, it's been harder and harder for me to get guests on Monday nights because everybody's involved with practicing on iRacing or racing an iRace. So this iRacing is really becoming kind of a big deal. And the talk earlier was about this was going to be an iRacing event with some ideas about whether or not they'd like to eventually do this in Chicago as a street race. So I was curious to know if you had watched it and what your thoughts were.
Well, if you recall from our previous discussions, even during the COVID shutdown, I think during the entire COVID shutdown, I watched a total of 10 minutes of iRacing. And I am not against it. It is a tool, and there's a lot of exposure. It's bringing in new fans. It is just not my thing. I did not watch it. However, I did check in on it on Twitter. I know that James Davidson won. some of the things. And if that is the case, that NASCAR is testing it in this iRacing to see, I'm not sure how much they can get out of that, because again, the fan interest is where it comes in, as well as supporting it. Unfortunately, we got to talk about Chicagoland Speedway. You know, I felt like that was a good track, a good racing. You and I have been there. We saw what kind of great racing it was between Kyle Larson and Kyle Busch, as well as several others. So I'm afraid it's one of those of, the fans are going to be like, yeah, we want it, we want it, we want it. As soon as they get it, one, two races, you know, a couple of years, and they're like, oh, we don't like this, we don't want it, it's doing this. You know, it just seems to be the way of the fans. So I'd be really careful about it. I do have interest in it. You know, and I go back to COTA. I really thought COTA was going to be a wreck fest. And it was, but it wasn't because of the track. It was because of the rain. The other two races we saw there, I thought that the series did a great job in handling on the course itself. The rain obviously caused the problems for the Cup Series. So a street course like that, I don't know, because I don't know how Cup cars would handle it. When you're talking about Formula One or Indy cars, they're low built and designed to be able to do tighter turns. And that's part of the reason I am not a big fan of IndyCar when it comes to that, is then that makes the passing that much harder. But with COTA as kind of an example, although it's not in the street course, it was a tight technical track like that. I thought the Cup guys, as well as the Xfinity and Trucks, NASCAR's top three, did a good job of putting on a show. So I would be okay with them trying it one time, or, you know, at least to try it and see how it goes. My fear is that, like I said, the fans are going to scream for it and want it, and it's just not going to last, and then they're going to be like, NASCAR screwed this up and did this, and we don't like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, there's different people that can be involved in it when it's an iRacing event. And that was shown with the winner of this particular event. But I go back to what we talked about earlier on the show with Jennifer and Austin, is that it's a totally different thing when you're iRacing and when you're actually in the car. You can feel things in the car where you can't feel those things when you're doing iRacing, in order to improve the car to make it easier to drive. So you do get a reset button, though. If you wreck a car, you can reset the button and kind of get a fresh new car to drive with. But I think there's a lot of difference between iRacing on a street course like this and what the racing would be like in reality if you were in a stock car racing on the streets of Chicago. So I would like to say, I don't know if there's a way that they can test it with drivers ahead of time and get their feedback on it before they actually go and race. I just think that iRacing is not really the best way for them to get a feel over whether or not this is going to be something that works. The other thing I think about, and I know Chicago's used to this, they've got marathons that happen all the time. There's charity runs and races. So they're used to closing down the streets and everything. But as far as viewing the race from the streets, I just wonder how they're going to be able to set that up. I'm kind of curious to know how all of that would work out. From a viewing perspective, I think it might be a little bit harder for fans to view the race in a reality setting. So it's an interesting concept, but I also hear you when you say, fans, it sounds good on the surface, but until we actually do it, I guess they're really not going to know. And it could be, you know, here today and gone tomorrow as a result. I think there's just so many factors that play into this.
The one thing that when you talk about it, and if NASCAR was doing that to try and evaluate it from the iRacing perspective, I think they can get some ideas and then see how to lay out a road or a street course. I don't want to call it the road course, call it a street course. You know, if they see spots where, okay, in the computer simulation, two cars ended up bumping together, even if they didn't crash there, you know, when it comes to real cars, if they were to bump like that, one of them's going to have an issue. So I think that there is some information that can be gleaned from it, but I don't think, like you said, enough to truly make that decision. It would almost have to be a testable thing. And it all depends on how it is, what streets it's laid out on. If there is that little bit of, and I got, the only thing I can lean back to is IndyCar and some of the ones I've seen where they put up the barricades, and yeah, you got no runoff. On a road course, you have the spots where you have runoff. If you get pushed off the track, you're not going to be stuffed in a wall and out of the race. You're just going to be at the back of the pack, or they got to tow you out of the rocks or whatever. So I think that's the biggest thing that comes into play. One thing I do think they can look at and evaluate, though, is, and I'm going to use Coda again, that the technical of that track. But there again, if they did get off track, there was runoff room of, can they set it up where there is a little bit of runoff room versus a barricade on both sides? You either make it or you don't.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I think that's
going to
be tough to do.
You're right. And I don't know if for a couple of days, they could, or a day, they could shut it down and just have drivers go out there and run too wide, or show some battles of, you know, intentionally, basically when you go go-kart racing, you know, you want to race around your friends and bump and bang of shut it down for a test period like that, you know. Or how they could pick which roads, like I said, that they know there's more open space where they could put that runoff areas in. But you mentioned fan viewing. That one I think is I don't want to say the same, but similar to a road course. No matter where you sit on any given road course, you're only going to see a portion of it. And it would depend on how this street course is laid out. If it's near, say, a park and you have the one side of the park and the other that you can view across and see more than one stretch. Certain areas, if there's available rooftops that they could sell as far as grandstands, if you will, I'm sure businesses would allow something
TVs
to that sort. Right. So there again, it would depend on what roads they have set up. If there's areas where they could get in a portable grandstand, I know I've seen that at tracks like Road America. When I visited there, that's what they do, is they bring in a section of portable grandstands to set up on certain stretches. So it all depends. But I think that I don't know how, in this case, for a road course, how they would sell tickets for it. Because, again, if you live in that area, or businesses say, hey, we're going to be the ones, you know, if it's our roof, maybe then that's where NASCAR has to come in and say, okay, we want to rent your rooftop for the day, and you can only go up there if you have a ticket from us. That's a whole lot of other logistics, which I hadn't even thought about. When we talk about it, I'm thinking first thought is the on-track or on-street racing product. But, yeah, the fan tickets, which that's how they'd make their money, it would be a whole nother ball of wax.
Logistic, yeah, it's a whole – and to me, I think it's going to be a logistical nightmare just knowing how Chicago operates. So it's going to be interesting to see if this really comes to fruition. But I almost think they've got to kind of plan some kind of a practice session, if you will, for drivers to actually get out there and drive on those streets.
The man to talk to would be Roger Penske, since he is quite heavily involved in IndyCar racing, and they do some street courses. I'm sure they are watching or talking with and learning from IndyCar, since they are ones that do it, and how they do it, especially when it comes to the logistics of the fans and getting seating around certain areas. I know they do it in different cities, but the principles would apply the same in any city.
Right. Did you see the Indianapolis 500?
That I did not. Being that I was on vacation, that one I didn't even, other than knowing that Helio won his fourth, I don't know anything. I did see on Twitter, okay, we'll spin that into another, I don't know where we're at with time. coming up on short on it. Okay.
Yeah.
I did not, other than Helio winning it, and I did see a lot of comments that it was a good race.
Yeah, it was kind of fun seeing Roger Penske in his new role with Indianapolis Motor Speedway and IndyCar. I think he gave the command for, you know, he was it the command?
I believe he did, so, the command.
Yeah,
yes.
It was really a lot of fun to see Roger Penske in his new role there. And then Jimmy Johnson and Steve Letarte were kind of on the side with their commentary throughout the race as well. So Jimmy Johnson didn't actually race the Indy 500, but it was fun kind of hearing some of his comments as well as Steve Letarte. And it almost felt a little bit, especially for Steve Letarte, he was almost a fish out of water there. But it was kind of fun to see what his perspective was at the same time.
And that did bring me back to something, following Twitter on that. I'm going to use it to make a point I did earlier and then just put it up as a hot topic for next session,
Monday
night. What I saw, like I said, fans were saying it was great racing. NASCAR needed to pay attention to this and get rid of stage racing. Now, all of a sudden, fans who wanted racing hard during the race and all this are against stage racing. And that is one of those that where in my mind I was like, they want something, they get it, and all of a sudden they don't want it no more. So that will be a hot topic for me on Monday, whether or not NASCAR needs to get rid of stage racing.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of that. I like the stage racing. I sincerely dislike people hanging out at the back until the end of the race and not really racing. I think fans pay way too much money to watch their driver ride around at the back of the race to show up only at the end. And to me, the stage racing has kind of encouraged people to race throughout the entire race to get those stage points. And I think as we get closer to the end of the season, more and more people are going to be driving for those stage points.
Which is what fans asked for, that hard racing during the race and not hanging out in the back. And NASCAR came with the way to give it to them, and now they don't like it. And that's what frustrates me. And we'll have to see who else we get on Monday night and what others share. I'm with you. I think it was one of the best things NASCAR has done. And truthfully, when they first announced it, I was a little leery about it. Didn't understand how. The one I listen to, Dave Moody, he's one, hey, and I'll bring more of that up on Monday when we talk about it, but
yeah,
it was
we're
a great
bits
thing.
And pieces of what you're saying, so it's good that you're going to bring it up on Monday again. So we'll
be
able to hear.
Am I losing my phone again?
Well, I can hear you. It's just that it's breaking up.
Okay. I was saying that I wasn't necessarily in favor of it and didn't understand it when they first said they were going to do it. And Dave Moody said, you know, hey, with anything, give it 6 races, 8 races, especially where it applies on all tracks before you make a judgment. And that is one where I have to go back and say, hey, I misjudged this because I do think it is a good thing.
Yeah, I'm glad you're able to do that. Okay, we are coming up on the top of the hour. And surprisingly enough, we were able to get there and have not been cut off of the show. So let's go ahead and do our roundtable, Jay. What are you up to this weekend?
Well, there as you mentioned getting cut off. I tried not to touch my phone a whole lot and overheat it, so only had the one blip tonight, and it wasn't during the cutoff, so that's a good thing. This weekend, I may be headed to a Sprint store to see if I can get a better phone or get this one fixed. Other than that, I'll be headed to Jackson Motor Speedway, your capital city raceway. I had my week off and unfortunately missed some late models, but I will be there for the USCS Sprint cars, which are going to be hitting the capital city raceway in Jackson, Mississippi. And you can follow me Facebook, Michael Hoosman on Facebook, and MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to see some early race interviews, I got a partner now down there that I've been going down early and doing some driver interviews. You'll pick them up on the Jackson Motor Speedway homepage.
Okay. Any articles you're working on?
You know, and I still want to do it. I know I started, I had the thought process, and I just came across some of the stuff you gave me. I really do need to get on that. Michael McDowell. Sorry, Michael McDowell, on the year he's had with Front Row Motorsports. And I know we keep talking about where he's at on the playoff bubble. If we get enough drivers in that win and he gets pushed out even with the win. And I know I saw another article come out on his status for next year. So I will really try to get on that this weekend and get something to you on Michael McDowell this next week.
Okay, that would be awesome. I think that would be really good. And then also I'll be putting out those two articles that I was talking about earlier that we didn't really get to on our show tonight because we were kind of short on time there. If you did not hear our interview with Jennifer and Austin Wayne Self earlier on tonight's show, I really would strongly encourage you to go back and check out those interviews. Jennifer's going to be in the Better Half iRacing event, the Better Half iRacing Dash on June the 10th. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1's Race Hub, and I really encourage everybody to take a listen and check that out. She is the defending champion from the last race that took place in October of 2017. So I think we had a lot of fun on that interview, and we had both Austin and Jennifer, and it was fun hearing their perspectives. Also, a big shout-out to our listeners for tuning in. We always appreciate you taking the time to hear what we have to say. We have Sam's recap of the Cup race up on the site if you want to check that out. And we're definitely looking forward to having more on Bamfor Racing over the weekend. So looking forward to the racing that's going to take place at Mid-Ohio and Sonoma and on the road courses. I love the road course races, and this is going to be a fun weekend to watch racing. So with that, Jay, thank you for being here tonight, and we missed you when you were gone, but we're happy to have you back.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll come back on Monday night then, because I think you said Sal was not available, so I'm coming on Monday night, correct?
Yes, yes, and thank you for that. I appreciate it. He thought he was going to be coming back, and then something changed since I talked to him on, what was it, Tuesday? Or Wednesday of last week, when I talked to him over the weekend, he said he can't. He was able to do the show Monday night, but he says he's not going to be able to do the show next Monday night. So he's still out of town and still out there for work. So we really appreciate you helping out.
Not a problem. I always love doing the reviews, especially for the road courses, like you mentioned. So I will talk to you on Monday.
And right now we have Joe Graff Jr. scheduled for Monday. And then the show that we had to cancel, Andreas Perez de Lara with Rev Racing, he's a Legends car driver. We're going to have him on the show next Thursday night. So definitely looking forward to both of those guests for next week.
Most certainly. Good week for the guests. And I'm glad we got one on Monday night now as well. I know you said it's been tough to do that.
It has been, you know, with the iRacing practices and races that have been going on, a lot of these drivers are tied up. So I'm glad that we've got somebody scheduled as well. And if something comes up and Joe can't do it, then hopefully Chris Knight will be able to step in. And it's always fun talking to him, too. Okay. So with that, Jay, I think we're ready to call it a night.
All right. Have a good night, and we'll talk to you Monday. Enjoy the racing weekend.
Okay. See you on the other side. Good night, everybody. Enjoy the race weekend.